Viewers, listeners, welcome to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. My guest today is someone I've known many, many years. I'm not going to say how many years, but it's a long, long time. I have no hesitation in saying that this lady is one of the best operators that I've actually done land acquisition with and been involved in planning with. She's an amazing operator. She knows her job inside and out. She's fantastic to deal with. And in addition to all of that, she is just life, one of life's lovely human beings. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce Alison Dowsett, who is the Managing Director of Planning and Policy for Barclay Ventures. Alison, how are you? Welcome to Blighty Talks Bricks.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for that lovely introduction. I'm good, and I'm excited to talk to you today.
Well, as I said just before we went on air, it does go quickly. I've got some questions that I want to rattle through. First of all, I'd just like to get, really for the viewers and listeners, to get a handle on my guest and what they've done. How did you manage to get into this industry all those years ago? Because it was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Unfortunately, it was far too long ago. We're not going to say how long.
No, we're keeping that a secret.
We are, yes. Well, when I was young, my dad had a couple of pieces of land, really small pieces of land, and I was a bit of a daddy's girl, and I liked challenges and problems and maths, and so he asked me to help him look at the pieces of land and see what we could do with them. And we had one piece of land, and we got planning for one house in the Greenbelt, and it had lots of legal covenants on it, and I found that really interesting.
How old would you have been when you were doing that kind of stuff?
About 15.
15?
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of the start of it. And then my favourite subjects at school were maths and geography. And the careers advisor said, oh, you'll want to do surveying then. And I thought, sounds all right, quite interesting. And I went to Reading University and studied land management as it was then. And I specialised, they had three choices of specialisation, and I chose development because I think probably of what I'd done with Dad and where it seemed most interesting. And I also chose residential development, and I'm not really sure why. And Alan Cherry from Countryside was one of our lecturers.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, and so he was quite inspirational. And so from that, I then left and applied for jobs, and I started work with Idle Homes as a graduate. I think I was meant to do a rotation, but I actually started in land, stayed in land, and that's where I've been ever since.
Well, we'll have a little quiz out there, because that's when I think I met you. not when you was graduate necessarily, but it was a long time ago. Mm. Obviously, Ideal not being around these days. Mm. So you were obviously academic at school. Did you find studying easy?
I did. I was one of these strange people that actually liked exams. So
that makes you strange when I'm looking at you, because I certainly don't.
I usually did well in exams, probably better than I would have done in coursework. So again, that's what I'd like about land buying, is that it's normally quite high pressure. You normally need to do things in a fast time frame. You need to think, make decisions quickly. And I like that.
So you got into Ideal. Was it what you thought it was going to be? Because sometimes I hear people, they start their first job when they come out of university, or even if they just not university, start their first job. They don't settle, they don't enjoy it. You just took to it, you loved it?
I did. I don't think I kind of knew what land buying was, if I'm honest. So I started.
I don't think any of us do now.
Land buyer. I had Simon Guest was my boss, and so he was a fantastic boss, and was really passionate about what he did and or what he does, and so that was great. And he was really good at it. So I learnt a lot from Simon, and that was really enjoyable. Part of that was in the recession in the early 90s, and so that was challenging and hard. Once the market really went, but. Yeah, I did take to it straight away. I loved it.
And why did you leave Ideal? Job promotion, change of circumstance?
I think through that long recession in the early 90s, it was just got really boring, because we weren't buying any land. And so I actually made a decision, and I went to work for a housing association for 18 months. I thought I was going to solve my social conscience by going to work for a housing association, but I didn't, whilst that was great and it was a really good experience, I didn't really like all the red tape. It felt like there was much more red tape in a more sort of
in the public sector.
Environment, and that, and I understand why that's there, but it wasn't really for me.
So housing association, you've been in it, you've dealt with your social conscience, you're struggling with the red tape, where next?
Then I went to Lang Homes, and I did 2 years working for Lang in Wokingham. And then I wanted to move to Brighton for personal reasons, so I applied for a job in Lang Homes South, I guess. I can't even remember what the company was called. I got that job, and that's when I went to work for Sean Ellis, who was then my boss for 25 years.
Because then, obviously, that's when I bumped back into you.
Yeah.
So when you went to your housing association, that's when we wouldn't have seen each other for a while, and then I bumped into you. So he was your boss for a long time. You're still at the same organisation. Has the Barclay Group changed in your time there?
Yeah, I have. So from Lang, Sean moved to Barclay, and then I didn't think I was going to go with him, but then he asked if I would be interested, and I was, so I did. And so I've been at Barclay now for 20 years, and yeah, definitely, it's definitely changed. I mean, when I started, we were still building, a lot more of the traditional detached homes in the home counties in Surrey. And I think we just changed to become what Tony would say is an urban regenerator. And so we had just started picking up some of the bigger schemes in London. Yeah. Particularly St George had done a few of those, but we were still doing, I think the first scheme at Barclays we did together was maybe 200 homes, so
yeah.
and that wouldn't be something that
they would have done when you started.
We would be looking at now.
Yeah.
And I think over the last 10 years now, the majority of our sites are now over 1,000 homes, and we had very few of those 20 years ago.
Yeah. The million-dollar question, is it harder now? I mean, you did your time in social. You said there was an element of red tape, call it, different set of rules. When I speak to people on this podcast, house builders, in all aspects of the industry, I'm not going to put words into your mouth, but everyone says, oh, it's so much harder now.
Without a doubt, it's the hardest now, I think, than it's ever been. And you're going to ask me why that is. There's lots of reasons for that. I think that the planning system has become more and more complex.
Yeah.
You can have lots of examples of how big a planning application used to be and how long a Section 106 used to be and then what it is now and how many planning conditions you have. So just through that, there are more things considered in the planning process. I think it's also got more and more and more political. Yeah. And the more political it's got, the more complicated and difficult it's got. So, our typical planning applications maybe 3 or 4 years ago would probably take 2 years from start to finish, and they're now taking 4.
And is that, and I totally concur, and people that have got a much higher pay grade than me always say to me that things are longer. Are the reasons that they're longer valid? Or is it just political chess? Is it we are less productive? Or do you think, no, that actually it's right that they take that time because there are lots of social concerns that need to be taken into account? Or could we streamline it?
I think a lot of it is political. So if you work with a local authority, and there are some of them in London that we work with, that actually where everything that you want to achieve and they want to achieve is aligned. And when you work out what you both want to achieve, usually there's more in common than there isn't.
Yeah.
And then when you have that, you can see the application kind of fly through, but everybody needs to be aligned and decide what the priorities are. And I think often too much now, everything is a priority and people can't make a decision which one really is.
So for Great Britain PLC, in our challenge to provide more homes, and lots of the schemes you do are not just private, are they? There's lots of social.
No, we build affordable homes on all of our sites. So pretty much 35% in line with the GLA's policy in London.
So basically, Great Britain PLC, by its own internal politics, doesn't matter which side it is snookering itself to deliver homes, because it just doesn't want to actually concede, or, as you say, it doesn't want to make things happen because it's political.
I think people do want to make things happen. I think that it's about choosing what you want out of each scheme, and then making sure that that happens. It's about being clear about the priorities and what's important.
One of the other questions I ask when I get people come on that are in the industry, embedded in it, like you, do we, the industry, do we do enough together? Do we not, you know, we're all the house builders, all the agents, they're individual companies, they've all got their own agenda of what they're doing. But do we, the industry, come together enough to... Because Joe Public doesn't really like us, does it?
No. And you can see why. You can see why the public doesn't like us. We haven't covered ourselves in glory over the last number of decades. And so I do understand that, and we have to work hard to build that trust.
Yep.
And keep building the trust. So I think, you know, collectively that would be a great thing the industry can do. I think, I mean, we... At Barclay, we've just done, we've worked with British Land and Landsec over the last sort of 18 months, doing some research and also putting forward sort of political lobbying messages. Yep. And actually, that's really worked well for the three of us to come together. And our main message is prioritising brownfield land and getting, making sure that the best is, you're getting the best out of each. Brownfield land, so that we have to lose less greenfield. And that's been really successful because we've been really clear about what we want, and we're all sort of joined up. I think sometimes when you try and have too many people together, the messaging becomes less clear because not everybody has the same agenda.
Okay. What would our old mentor, certainly for you, bless him, Tony Pidgley, think today if he was to, I'm sure he looks down on us, but yeah. What do you think he would be saying about stuff today? Always brings a smile to people's face. Every time I mention his face, what a lovely thing to leave behind. Every time I mention his name, people that I'm talking to, they just have a lovely wry smile, and they just...
Yeah, well, he was an incredible man with an incredible legacy. So, I mean, we often ask ourselves that, what would Tony be doing, what would Tony be saying? I think, you know, the great thing about Tony is that he would have launched himself into trying to solve the problems. You know, he would never let anything lay, and he would always come up with a new idea and something different to do. And, you know, work relentlessly to try and solve the problems. But having said that, I know for sure he would be very frustrated.
Yeah, I couldn't have put it better myself. I developed this thing, make believe, Blighty's magic wand, and I give it to my property guests. I've realised it's not a magic wand. It's actually fucking useless. But I'm going to give you... if I could give you three wishes that you could take to Parliament tomorrow to assist and help the planning system, the housing crisis, the property market in general, what would you do?
Oh, I think the first one would be something that I alluded to earlier, political leadership. I think that's, you know, the leaders need to be leaders. And they need to be clear about what their priorities are, what their aspirations are, and make those things happen. So, you know, if it's delivering affordable housing, then, you know, that needs to be the priority, and sometimes it's not now. So I would say one is political leadership. I think the second one is to get the housing associations back on track. You know, we need to build homes. We're in a housing crisis. Everybody that can needs to build homes. It's not just the private sector. And the housing associations are really struggling.
They're in a predicament, aren't they?
Yeah, they
are. I mean, I don't deal with them as directly as you do, but people tell me they don't have any money, they don't have any cash, they're struggling with cladding issues, they're struggling with defects, but they can't move forward because they don't have any money. Well, if that is factual, and I'm getting this secondhand, we have a problem, don't we?
We do. And so they need to be refinanced. You know, they need to have enough resource. They need to be helped to deal with the you know, the defect issues, the cladding and the mould and the damp and things. And so that actually they can meaningfully play a part in building more homes and more affordable homes. So that for me is a really important one. And then the third one would probably be around, you know, making sure that we have enough resource in the planning world and that people are resourced up, because that is an issue too.
We don't have enough planning resource.
I mean, we do have enough. The planning officers that are there are in the main fantastic. They're just not enough of them, and they're under a huge amount of pressure. So if there was enough of them and they had the leadership, then I think you'd see things moving through the planning system a whole lot more quickly.
I think all good, strong wishes. I think important things. I don't see how we can get housing crisis, property market back on track if we don't do that. How do we get that message across? Because what you just said there, it's slightly different with the guests I've had on. There's some different things there, but generally speaking, it's all similar. How do we get that message across? We didn't get it across to the Conservatives, who you would have thought would have been property orientated. They had a long spell. We've now got it to Labour. It's early days, but I don't see any positive noises coming from Labour to deal with those kind of issues. How do we get that message across? Have we as an industry all got a march on Parliament? Or you mentioned you're doing some work with a couple of other organisations where you're lobbying and working on brownfield sites. Is there a way that we can come together to get that message across?
I think we need to, again, I mentioned it earlier, but kind of build the trust. We do need to keep lobbying. We do need to keep talking to all of the politicians are central. For me, certainly the GLA and the local politicians. And I think that actually the new government have prioritised housing, and they do mean that. It's then how are they actually going to action it? So I think that we've got the will, but it's not being, you know, they haven't got the money to put it into action, and they're not always, you know, their priorities are not always our priorities, so we need to make that happen. But I think that they have said it's a clear priority, so we do need to keep lobbying. But I think we also do need to, build the trust between us and local authorities and make sure as developers we do what we say we're going to do, and that we deliver on what we commit to, because we haven't always done that.
No, agreed. I want to take you away from politics, planning, those things. What I said at the start of this podcast was that you are one of the best operators I've worked with. It obviously seems as though as a 15-year-old you were quite naturally gifted in certain things. My geography school report said Stephen does well to find his way to the classroom, but you obviously took to it. What's it been like for you being a lady, being a female, in, I guess, is still a male-dominated industry? What's that journey been like?
Do you know, I've not known anything different, because I've always worked in this industry. I've only ever done the same thing. And when I first started work, I would go to events and there would be 100 men and me, which was...
Was that intimidating?
A little bit daunting. But again, you know, I had a lot of... support and you know, colleagues and friends who would be there, so it never felt desperately uncomfortable, but so it's something that I've always known. That's all I've ever really known. It's really encouraging to see more women coming through and more women coming into senior positions, and that's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I enjoy mentoring, you know, younger women coming through, and I try and do that quite a lot because I think it's really important. No, it's not always been easy. And it would be wrong of me to say that I haven't experienced sort of direct and indirect sort of sexism through my career. But obviously, you know, the people that have supported me through my career, so like Sean and Tony and you know, Rob Perrin's my the current CEO of Barclay, you know, have been fantastic, and they've believed in me, and they haven't, you know, from the opportunities I've been given, I haven't seen any. You know, there hasn't been anything, any sort of any doubt or reluctance to give me an opportunity. So that's been fantastic. But I can see that it is, you know, it is difficult. And I think that, you know, younger women are still seeing some of the same things that I experience, that sometimes it's...
Still today, there's still some of those things.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's difficult to speak up and you don't feel you're listened to sometimes. And a whole host of things, that we experience, you know, as women. And so I know that it is still difficult.
And you'd say that, do you get... more women today, because you've acquired one of the, and rightfully so, one of the top positions in the industry. Seriously, I say it again, because you are amazing at what you do. Do you find that you've got females of all ages that reach out to you a little bit and ask for a bit of guidance, or is that just you don't think it's like that, but you know that more speak to you?
I think that, you know, when anybody gets into a senior position, you sometimes forget that you are a role model and people look to you, and that actually everything you do and your behaviour, you do need to be held accountable for, right? Because that's
is that
important,
not maturity?
And you don't...
We just can't do it? Too old.
Yeah. You know, it is to some extent, but I think that, you know, people do look to you, but I do find that, you know, when I speak to women in Barclay and in the rest of the industry, they do, you know, want to understand from experience. You know, and if I can help people by sharing my experiences and my thoughts and my advice and tips, then I'm really happy to do that.
Schools. We mentioned youngsters. Schools. Are we doing enough for the industry to get the construction industry, not just the residential house building, are we doing enough to get construction back into schools? For me, it seems, and I might be out of touch, I don't think I am, with this particular thing, I think it seems that schools never seem to have construction on their list.
They don't, and I think you need to get, you know, it's known that you need to get young, you know, really young kids interested in it.
It's an amazing industry.
It's before it even comes to, you know, when you're making a decision about what career you're going to go into, you know, when you're an older teenager. And, no, I don't think we do enough in schools. And, you know, we go into schools quite a bit.
Barclay are still doing that, are
they? We do still do that. But, again, I would say that it's relatively ad hoc. So there needs to be much more concerted programmes to... you know, push the industry to so that people can learn about it and understand what the jobs are. I mean, I imagine if you still asked a 16-year-old what a land buyer was, they probably wouldn't know.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, I think if you mention the construction industry, I mean, you know, on the drive down today, it's a little bit rainy, it's a little bit miserable. And if you're seeing people walk around in hard hats and high vis jackets, you're going to think, well, that's not a good job. But there's so many elements to it that can give amazing careers and are really interesting, but it just seems to be missed, doesn't it?
It does, and I think also for women as well. There are still very, very few women on construction sites. Again, encouraging to see a few more, but they're still fairly rare. And that's a huge opportunity that we completely miss.
Your role, do you still enjoy it?
I do, yes, I do.
It's a nice smile again. You obviously do.
Yeah, and I again, I have been really fortunate to have done a lot of different roles over my 20 years in Berkeley, doing a lot of different things. So it feels like I've been there for a really long time, but actually, there's been so many different things that it's not like I've had the same job. I think I'm probably on my 9th or 10th business card. So it's been really varied and always learning something new, which I like.
You like dealing with people?
I do.
You must do. You liked dealing with me once upon a time. So you must like, or is it just weird people you like dealing with? But
it's nice people, Steve, that I like dealing with.
Talking about nice people, we have an industry that I don't think the public realises how much we give to charities. Are there any particular charities that are close to your heart?
Yeah, I'm a trustee for the Berkeley Foundation, so and we have a number of strategic partners, and one that I particularly like is the New Horizon Youth Centre. So they are a homeless charity for 16 to 24 year olds based in King's Cross.
Okay.
And they do amazing work in helping with youth homelessness, because again, if you can stop the homelessness when somebody's young, it's much easier to do. It's more difficult because it sort of becomes embedded. And so they work really hard, and also they are, Philby, who's the chief executive, spends time, you know, trying to change policy and thinking of ways that differences could be made and lobbying in Parliament. So it's both thought leadership and real help for real people that really need it.
And it's based in King's Cross?
Yes. One of the things that they do say is that a lot of the people that come to them actually don't even know they're homeless. But you know, they come in because they found that they get some help, and I think it comes from, you know, the council or from sort of various other ways you find out about places like that. And then they say, you know, I've been sleeping on various people's sofas for the last 2 months.
They're just
not realising that, you know, they know that it's not right, and they're feeling, and they don't feel, you know, they're feeling anxious or in a really difficult place, but they're not actually associating themselves with being homeless.
Is there any charities that are personal to you? I mean, obviously, that one you're involved in because you're doing these big sites, you see these big schemes. The Berkeley Foundation has been going for a number of years now, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Is there any charities that, from sort of personal experience or that are close to you?
Yeah, I mean, there is, I don't know if I really want to say this, but there is one, which is the Huntington's Disease, I'm going to get emotional now, the Huntington's Disease Association, which is a charity that helps people with Huntington's disease, and... Yeah. Sorry.
No, listen, I can relate to it. Trust me, I can relate to charities having... You know, my old mum, bless her, had dementia. And it makes you emotional thinking if you've gone through a personal scenario like that. But so obviously it's something that was close to your heart for someone in your family.
Yeah, it is. Huntington's disease is a hereditary disease. So, okay. And it's in my family, so... It means quite a lot.
And where are they based? Are they based in the UK locally or?
Yeah, they are. I think the head office is Liverpool or something. But
right.
But they have different sort of regional offices.
Yeah.
And so the London one's in Harrow.
Well, I'm sorry that you felt like that, but I'm not sorry because I understand the feelings. It's important that this country looks after charities, the industry looks after charities, and it doesn't matter what you do for a living, at some point, sadly, we're all going to go through some tough times. But I've loved having you on. When we sat down, I said, time goes really quickly.
Has it gone?
It's more or less gone. It's more or less gone. It is lovely to see you. We haven't seen each other for a while. It's lovely to see you. You are a pioneer for females in the industry. I meant everything I said when we sat down, that you are seriously one of the best operators I've ever worked with. I learned so much with you. There were times that many a time I thought the deals we were working on were going in the bin. I'm sure that you were being chivvied along by Sean and Tony, but we got those deals done. Keep going. It's lovely to see you. I've enjoyed spending some time with you on Blighty Talks Bricks. Thank you very much. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Steve. It's been great.
Viewers, listeners, time flies. We've come to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. It's been lovely for me to see my old person that I've worked for in agency back in the past. I think you can tell she's a lovely lady. Take care. Stay safe.